The management of the fund would be delegated to a president hired by the board. Obviously, this person should be one with outstanding credentials. And the permanent fund would be structured into three parts: the development bank, the endowment fund, and then some sort of administrative section, if you will. It seems to us that the notion of a permanent fund, in fact, the very use of the word permanent, which was selected at the outset, that was the word that appeared in the voting booth when the Alaska voters expressed their opinion on this matter. The use of that term implies that the primary objective of the endowment fund should be capital preservation in the form of low-risk investments. The endowment fund should have a very well-defined investment policy setting out trading parameters to permit the manager of the endowment fund to take advantage of changes in money market conditions and changing economic conditions, yet to maintain adequate liquidity and to ensure prudent diversification of the endowment fund's portfolio. Of course, an excellent example of risk-free investment for the endowment fund would be U.S. government and agency securities. Now, there also is a way that the endowment fund can be managed so as to be compatible with certain social objectives. To address the issue of those certain normative capital shortages that exist to one extent or another. And that is through channeling certain investments of the endowment fund into the Alaska economy through primarily deposits in Alaska financial institutions. One appropriate vehicle, we feel, would be variable rate certificates of deposits set out for a particular term, which would make more funds available for term loans, which, of course, are the hardest loans for Alaskans to get. And the state might consider, as a rule of thumb, something like a third of the funds into the Alaska financial institutions. It's interesting to note that the Alaska financial institutions have been experiencing decreasing liquidity. Over the past 10 years, the deposits of the Alaska commercial banks, just looking at one part of the Alaska financial institutions, the deposits of Alaska commercial banks over the past 10 years tripled, and the loans of the Alaska commercial banks quadrupled. In 1970, the loan-to-deposit ratio of the Alaska commercial banks was about 53%. They're about 53% loaned out. Today, they're 76% loaned out. Public funds on deposit in the Alaska banking system have been decreasing as a percentage of the total. In 1970, in the early 70s, public funds on deposit in Alaska banks accounted for about one-third of the deposits in Alaska banks, and today they account for about one-fourth of the deposit in Alaska banks. So both from the standpoint of the liquidity needs of the Alaska banking system and in terms of some sort of historical pattern of the depositing of public funds into the Alaska banks, the deposits could be increased. And as I've observed, this gets at certain social objectives as well as economic objectives, because as you know better than I, those deposits can carry strings with them. They can be placed in the banks, and the banks can be either incented or directed to utilize those funds in a way that either coincides with or is conducive to the pursuit of certain of the social objectives that you people have in mind. That would allow the endowment fund, as I said, to simultaneously achieve two objectives: one, preserve the capital in the endowment fund, and two, pursue certain social objectives within Alaska that are of concern to you and a concern to all of us. Without, by the way, without increasing the state bureaucracy or operating expenditures. As I said, you would use the existing financial institutions as conduits. Okay, so that takes care of sort of the capital preservation side of the issue, the endowment fund side of the issue. Taking a look at the development bank side of the issue, it seems to me here that the objective of the development bank should be to expand Alaska's industrial base in a manner and to a degree that permits a continuation of these huge revenues that are going to be required in the future. And there's only one way in which these huge revenues are going to occur in the future, and that is with substantial, and I do mean substantial, investment in the industrial development of Alaska. Now, it's interesting to note that the total gross value of all of Alaska's basic industries, other than petroleum, doesn't even get up to the revenue paid by the petroleum industry. In other words, theoretically, you could tax all the other industries 100%, fishing, forest products, and so forth, which, of course, you couldn't do because you'd drive them out. But just theoretically, you could tax them 100%, and you wouldn't replace the revenues now coming in the petroleum industry. So there's a little, I think I've sensed in certain circles, a little whistling in the dark here when we talk about replacing these oil revenues. It's going to require substantial investments in large projects which affect the very nature of Alaska's economy. This is where this notion then of sort of a World Bank kind of structure and behavior comes in, that the development bank side would invest in both public and private projects. It would finance certain public sector projects such as dams, ports, transportation facilities, which expand the infrastructure and which thereby induce further expansion by the private sector. It could also invest in private projects through purchasing bonds and other debt instruments to finance the projects. Again, of a large nature, oil and gas pipelines, petrochemical facilities, mineral refineries, etc., etc., etc. It seems to me that to appropriately address this matter, there should be some sort of floor level on the development bank loans, that so they don't creep down into just expanding local business, which further intensifies the problem I'm talking about. The business loan program, I think, is best addressed elsewhere, at least over on the endowment fund side, but better than that, over in the general operating budget side. Obviously, the development bank lending activity would be allocated on a regional basis and industrial diversification, this sort of thing. Now, briefly, some conceptual and policy considerations. It seems to me that each year, the board of directors of this sort of quasi-public agency would present to you, for your approval, a sort of a general 10-year plan, a somewhat more specific 5-year plan, and a highly specific 1-year plan and budget. This is to ensure that the general management of the development bank is in accord with the objectives of the Alaska people. However, I think it's a very important point that the permanent fund should be free to function without the handicap of short-run individual political pressures. And to permit this, it seems to me the board of directors should be granted relatively broad powers. Also, as stated at the outset of my testimony, it seems to me that the objective of the permanent fund is singular, that there's only one objective to the permanent fund, it seems to me, and that is to generate sustainable revenue to the state of Alaska over the long run. seems to me that's the objective of the permanent fund, to generate sustainable revenue to the state of Alaska over the long run. Now, other objectives should not be allowed to cloud and confuse the effective management of the permanent fund. And therefore, I would suggest that the pursuit of certain social objectives, such as income redistribution, interest rate subsidization, rural welfare improvement, the whole gambit, should be kept out of the permanent fund and in the exclusive jurisdiction of the legislature where it belongs. That is, the state's social goals, it seems to me, should be pursued through the normal legislative and administrative processes. It can be noted, however, and I noted earlier, that certain investments by the permanent fund can have an important secondary effect of being conducive to pursuit of certain of the state's social goals. For example, if the endowment fund portion of the permanent fund bought mortgages, that would have a secondary effect of helping the achieve certain social goals. And finally, and this is where I get a little upset with my brethren back at home, if you will, and that is this whole notion of whether the money gets invested inside Alaska or outside, I think has been blown out of proportion, and I think you people are being subjective to unfair pressures here. Just the mere magnitude of this thing, the immensity of this thing, is going to require that the major portion of it, in the at least at the outset, goes outside for two very simple reasons. One is the Alaska economy, which is tiny, has the ability to only absorb so much money. The entire Alaska banking system, has only $2 billion in deposits. The entire Alaska banking system is about one-third the size of Seattle First National Bank, one of about 20 banks in the state of Washington. You know, so we can only absorb so much. And number two, I think the prudent man rule of investment management suggests that a portion of the fund's capital should be placed in low-risk, highly liquid securities such as instruments of the U.S. government. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing in that direction at all. I'm just acknowledging something to you that I don't think enough businessmen in Alaska have acknowledged to you when they keep banging you over the head and put more money in Alaska. If you voted to put 100% of the permanent fund into Alaska, there's no way Alaska could absorb it, unfortunately. But that's just a fact of life. Well, the objective then, to summarize on the key points that I'd like to make today, three key points. Number one, it seems to me the objective of the permanent fund is singular, and that is to generate future revenues. Number two, it seems to me the future revenues should be generated in two ways. First, as earnings on an endowment fund, which is oriented toward capital preservation. And second, through increased revenues which flow from an expanded industrial base which is helped along by investments by a development bank. And point number three, I think that to achieve these objectives, the administration of the fund should be relatively independent from, though ultimately and generally responsible to, political considerations. Well, I appreciate very much the opportunity to come down and share these thoughts with you. I hope they're helpful to you.
Thank you, sir. Questions, Mr. Richards? Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Richards, for your presentation. As far as I know, you're the first witness that we've had this year that recognizes the magnitude of the revenues that we're trying to lay some groundwork for, which runs into tens of billions of dollars, and I appreciate that you brought that point out. The suggestions you have for a concept of the permanent fund is not entirely new to me. I think to some extent was reflected in the House bill in the last legislature, although in your approach here, as I understand it, you're talking about a much more vigorous development bank function than was envisioned in the proposal in 1978. But I had some questions. that I did want to ask on your presentation. First, with regards to the endowment fund concept, purchasing, we'll say, purchasing Alaska loans. I noticed in your written testimony you said, purchasing Alaska loans also qualifies an appropriate investment for the endowment fund at rates commensurate with current money market conditions. Would that mean that that under that concept, the endowment fund would participate on basically the same rates and terms as other investors in Alaska, purchasing Alaska loans? Is that the general idea that you have expressed there?
Yes, Representative Malone. Sort of two thoughts come to mind. One is the conceptual notion, frankly, raised by the previous two testimonies, with which I concur in terms of sort of the functioning of capital markets. But if the value judgment, if the value judgment is made to subsidize mortgages of Alaskans, then maybe the legislature, you know, in its from the general fund, appropriate funds over to the permanent fund, if you will, to offset, you know, to subsidize a lower interest rate. That the permanent fund pursues sort of market objectives, and if social decisions are made, those be an appropriation out of the general fund.
Okay. So that the if mortgages were purchased in Alaska and decided to rather than purchasing those mortgages as part of the overall management of the portfolio as an endowment fund or an endowment trust, that was decided to purchase those mortgages at some preferred rate or subsidized rate, that there could be an appropriation to make up the discount, whatever it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Only to keep the two functions separate. Money management here, social decisions here.
Well, I have to say, I personally agree very much with that approach. I'd rather see those investments that actually represent cost to the state as far as management of a trust be reflected from the general fund. But I had a question on this, and sort of a political one. And it sort of applies to the general fund right now. The general fund is pretty heavy into mortgages, and as far as that goes, more than home mortgages, other types of loan paper in Alaska. And what happens, or what would happen at a point where, due to some economic downturn in the state, that people could not pay their mortgages, or a large number of them could? One of the concerns I have is that type of investment might mean that you have to write that paper off at that point. Now, in the general fund, I personally don't have so much of a reluctancy to do that, although I think that the money that is used for those types of investments should be appropriated and set apart, not carried as a general fund balance of the state, because it's a little bit misleading when it is. But how do you see the value of the assets in the endowment fund being protected against that sort of political situation where maybe they have $300 or $400 million in Alaska mortgages and something happens where people are going to have a very hard time paying their house payments? How do you insulate the fund?
Well, the rate which the fund would be receiving on Alaska mortgages would, if they received the market rate, would compensate the fund for the risk. In other words, okay, let's suppose the worst occurs and the bottom falls. Say, well, that was a financial risk that we took, and we got 16.5% on those mortgages rather than 12.5% on a U.S. government bond. So we were compensated for the risk that we took, and that's the way it goes. That's one kind of response to your question. However, I realize that sort of hedging the issue, because obviously the permanent, I shouldn't say obviously, there's a strong likelihood that the fund would be heavier into Alaska mortgages due to some social decisions than it might otherwise be if it were managed.
If I could interrupt you, I guess the same question I'm asking applies to in-state investment in general and the political pressures that can spring out of that. For instance, there's been talk in the press, different people mentioned the idea of a holiday on state loan repayment and so forth, which is one thing if it's a general fund, you appropriate the money. It's a little different when you're dealing with an endowment concept. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, I just wanted to.
Well, the, number one, the endowment fund has been sort of compensated for the risk, and there are other risks. There are other risks that the endowment fund will be taking elsewhere. For example, the endowment fund could have had a position in New York City bonds or Cleveland bonds or this sort of thing. And I have an intuitive feeling that based on the numbers, the projections that I've seen for the permanent fund, it wouldn't have an inordinately amount, a high amount of its money in Alaska mortgages, even if it satisfied the complete appetite of normative demand. So I think a money manager could look anyone in the eye and say, we knew there was that risk, we were compensated for that risk by the rate that we went into it. In the same way that he would respond to, why did you buy those New York City bonds? Also, the whole notion of market lost on mortgages is a very, very difficult one to measure. And things have, just speaking pragmatically now, things have to get awfully bad before I think any money manager is forced to write down values on single-family mortgages. And I think there's a very little likelihood that in Alaska, which itself is highly diversified in terms of its economies, I think there's very, very little likelihood of the fall in value occurring that you hypothesized, I think.
Sir?
Another question here. If I understand your approach correctly with regards to the development bank, as I interpret it at least, you're saying it may be difficult to replace the current level or come close to the current level of oil and gas revenues through the small-scale investment that similar to what the state has now in state loan programs and major projects, I guess in the area of natural resource development, will be necessary to come close to maintaining a similar level of revenues. And personally, I agree with that. I think that that's right. But if that if that's done, say it's in your written testimony, say it's not the intent of the development bank to subsidize industry, but rather to take more than normal risk in causing projects to happen which have demonstrated feasibility. And you recommend proper executive management, proper management. A lot of those very large projects, let's say like the gas pipeline, isn't a big portion of the risk dependent on what government policies themselves are, what the state's policies are, what the federal government's policies are? It would probably be in large-scale projects encountering to a large degree those types of risk, wouldn't you?
Yes. But I think that's sort of the way the world is today. And whether it be the state of Alaska's development bank or a multinational corporation, a risk that they're now facing today to a much larger degree than they did 20 years ago, let's say, is public policy. And I have no response other than that sort of reality, and it'll just have to function within that type of risk.
That was just my observation. I wanted to see if at least in part you concurred to that. And I've got one final question. In the summary there, you mentioned that, at least in the written testimony, that the pursuit of certain social objectives such as income redistribution, interest rate, subsidization, or providing preferred rates, rural welfare improvement, so forth, should be kept out of the permanent fund and within the exclusive jurisdiction of the legislature where it belongs. And I take to mean it from that those items, in your view, should be considered as part of the appropriations process that the legislature deals with on an annual basis. Is that
yes?
Yes. Thank you.
Are there a representative?
One question. Mr. Richard, I'm going to get back to one statement you made just to be sure that I understood what you were saying. I've been had some problems with the argument that if we handle the endowment part of it in a certain manner, that we are actually going to be exporting capital. And my argument has been, and still is, considering the magnitude of the amount of money that, over the long run, that we're supposed to have, if we can depend on projections, it seems to me that there is a reasonable limit with what the economy of Alaska can absorb without just blowing ourselves apart. And I've always, when they come to this argument about exporting capital, I've always thought of it as importing earnings. Am I off base on that?
No, I agree with you completely. Importing earnings, buying some risk reduction through diversification. I think that's a valid notion. Now, speaking. That's sort of my economist response. Speaking strictly as a banker, I would be irresponsible if I did not take this opportunity to express the notion that we could, I think today the banks could put out some more funds if the state of Alaska were to put them in. So I don't want to create the impression here that I think that today's state of affairs is fine, that the appetite is being met. We could use some more. But in response to the basic issue that you raised, yes, I agree with you.
May I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
But again, by the same token, isn't, if the projections are even close to that, isn't it true that there's probably a limit to what our Alaska banks can, you know, if we gave them first call, there is a limit there, is there not, to what the Alaska banks can have?
Absolutely. And there's two kinds of limits. One is simply what our customers could absorb, you know, what could be borrowed out there, if you will, what could be put to work. And then there's sort of a prudency limit, if you will. How much, a decision that I would have to make as president of Alaska Pacific Bank is how much do I want this one depositor to have in my institution and be subject to his changes. And there is some number. And it probably varies from bank to bank. As a policy decision, our bank limits public funds to no more than 25% of our deposits by policy. So yes, there is a limit.
Again, another one of my personal views and prejudices on that has been that the proper thing to do is to protect the trust and handling it as conservative as we possibly can, and treat the earnings, let the earnings come back to the general fund and be treated by the people who are making the decisions and based on their knowledge of what the needs are that day, and use it in that manner. And in my own mind, I keep these two separated. And as I understood what you were saying, I don't think you disagree with me that much, do you? Is that?
No, I don't. One can raise the notion, though, that if you want the endowment fund to grow, if you want to maintain the, for lack of better words, purchasing power of the endowment fund, then it should generate a rate of return at least equal to the rate of inflation, and those returns should go back into it, if you get, just given that consideration. But again, to get at, I think what you basically were raising, this sort of the validity of separating the notion of maintaining the corpus and treating the corpus and the earnings differently, I think that's a valid thing to do.
Thank you.
Representative Cheddar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, I don't want to debate this point, but your board of directors, I heard you mention at the start that you wanted to depoliticize it, and I think you've highly politicized it with the makeup of the board. But be that as it may, let's talk about the Development Bank. Now, did I hear you, Bob, say that you wanted that the Development Bank would look at, and it does have a loan committee, look at dams, harbors, infrastructure, and I guess highways, things of that nature? Now, they are conventional things for government to do through normal capital improvement projects.
Right.
This wouldn't be a thing that a development bank could loan against because you wouldn't have any return.
Well, on some you would. On a dam you would. On a highway, you could structure it in a way. In other words, the development bank could buy the state's bonds, if you will, and get its return that way. Now, granted, it would be getting a less than alternatively possible rate because it would be getting the municipal bond rate, if you will, and it would, I imagine, the development bank would not be taxable. So there would be some earnings opportunity costs there.
Again, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, sir.
To me, why that's their highways, dams, harbors, infrastructure, or to me, normal things for government to do because private enterprise normally do those things. Now, the second phase of your development bank, you mentioned, I think, the development bank investing into petrochemicals, I presume agriculture, and such, even to the ridiculous extent of growing citrus fruit north of the Arctic Circle. If what can this development bank do if it keeps always, if the loan committee uses a benchmark for the economic viability of any new scheme? What can the development bank do that the conventional banking industry cannot do?
Well,
I got a suggestion from Mr. Chatterton, although not necessarily some of the development bank concept, and that is that they can provide perhaps a lot more money.
Yeah, and the development, credit decisions, if you will, are value judgments, and one could pose the question, well, why do we need a World Bank to loan to Rhodesia and so forth when Chase Manhattan can? Well, in one respect, the answer, in the pure sense, it's not needed in the pure sense. But you have here a financial institution that's very, very familiar with Alaska, that has a different attitude toward Alaska risk, if you will, and that is more inclined to, on the vernacular of the bankers, approve the Alaska loan than Citibank would be. So in the pure sense, I understand the point you're making, but I think that the world today is of such a nature that we're going to see more sort of cooperative activity between the public sector and the private sector. Regardless of how I might feel about that philosophically, I just think that's the way it is. And what I'm saying here is, for example, here you have a creative group of people at the Development Bank, let's say, and they're having the funds available, as Representative Malone indicated, to build a gas liquids line might be the very thing that induces a major chemical company to put a petrochemical facility at the end of the gas liquids line, as an example. The key point being made in the section on the development bank dwelling on the development thing. The key point being made there is the magnitudes of kinds of investments upon which to focus. If the permanent fund is going to do in the long run what we think it's got to be done, it's got to make investments that alter the very structure of our economy. If this thing degenerates down into loans to permit the grocery store owner in Galena to expand, or every other little thing around the state, all it's going to do is intensify the problem later on. But as these gentlemen pointed out, you know, what you really need out there in the bush is incomes. And incomes depend upon an altered, you know, an economic base that creates incomes. And that's why I think that's what the development bank section is really sort of meant to be saying, as distinguished from sort of the specific investments or what it does. It seems to me the main message there is focus on altering our economic structure rather than sort of focusing on giving loans to local Alaska businesses.
Mr. Chairman, I understand. Now, all right, let's take the gas liquids line. And I'll ask you the question, not wanting the answer you're going to give me, but I'll ask it this way. Would you rather have the, what is it, 9-member board of directors and the loan committee make the decision to invest, to underwrite, I know it's a naughty word, to subsidize, to use public monies to put that gas, to fund the building of that gas line? Or would you rather have the legislative review for it and a direct appropriation to do it?
Well, first of all, if the development bank is functioning as it should, there shouldn't be a subsidy involved. But you do hit upon an important element of this thing, which frankly I haven't reconciled myself in my mind, and that is they're going to be making decisions here that have immense social implications to them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Further questions of Mr. Richards? Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Richards, I don't know that this was emphasized or even actually mentioned in your oral report or even in the written one, but in connection with the concept of a development bank and some of the large-scale projects that such a bank might be involved in, what sort of standards might be applied to those types of things as to what, you know, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't? It's a common problem around the legislature, which is usually settled by how many votes do you have, but trying to determine what particular public works projects, for example, actually have some produce net benefits, which produce some benefits, and which don't produce any at all. And it's one that we don't really have a handle on. In general, we do something, then later on you see how it worked out. But at the front end, what sort of general rules should be laid on to determine whether the large projects whether they're so large or not, but expensive projects that have may have net benefits, that is, produce more real income than they cost to begin with, how can we determine what those are? Economists refer to these things as infrastructure sometimes, and I'm not sure what that term means, but I do know it's next to impossible to reach an agreement on what is a good public works project once you get past a certain scale of size. Some people say, well, it's a boondoggle. Others say, well, no, it's going to provide needed jobs, and others say, no, it's going to pay off in the long run. What kind of intelligent approach can be taken to making those kinds of decisions, especially if you place that responsibility within an institution created by government?
Well, that's a level of specifics that the paper does not address, but I think only a obliquely, and that is the sense that this, the endowment fund, if I mean the permanent fund, if you will, would present annually to the legislature is sort of these three plans, the 10-year plan, the 5-year plan, and the annual budget. So the consensus or the either the consensus and or the majority feeling of the legislature would find itself reflected in the general pursuit of the investments by the fund. And I suppose the answers would come about simply by the two methods that you use already, and that is one by simply sort of economic analysis of the state in terms of where certain needs exist, where certain opportunities are, and certain political and social objectives that the legislature as a body seems to reflect. I realize I haven't answered your question at all.
It's a hard one to answer. I just wondered. I saw some comments you'd made previous to the session even, about the need to develop, I don't know if you use the word infrastructure or not, but certain types of facilities that had both public and private benefits. I wondered if you had some idea how we could determine which ones made sense and which ones didn't, separating from all the hype, because we get a lot of that here. So the answer is, it's pretty hard to do, right?
Well, it's very hard to do. I'll give it some more thought and get back to you.
Thank you.
Further questions of Mr. Richards? Mr. Richards, just to clarify again, you're representing what organization?
Alaska Pacific Bank.
And you're leaving town today, but you could come back.
Absolutely.
You have another question?
I don't want to interrupt other members, Mr. Chairman. I did have one other question. It applied to the written testimony, I think. And see, these pages aren't numbered, but in the discussion of the, in the last full page of the discussion of the endowment fund here before the written remarks, page before the written remarks begin to address the development bank concept, the last paragraph starts out, "The social and economic benefits derived from investing in Alaska home mortgages are particularly attractive because of the multiplier effect." Do you have an idea what range that multiplier reaches, just in general terms?
A general idea, and frankly, it has been overstated. There has not been a study of the multiplier effect of the home building industry in Alaska. There has been a study of the multiplier effect of the home building industry in the United States, and it's estimated to be about 7. And the average multiplier, the average employment multiplier in the United States is about 5. But the average employment multiplier for manufacturing in general in Alaska has been estimated to be about 1.7. So if you took that ratio, you would get a multiplier of probably, let's say, 1.8, 1.9. Alaska has a very small employment multiplier for any industry because of our very high leakage.
In other words, the big portion of the goods and services are of necessity than what purchased outside the state. Is that what it comes
exactly?
From?
Now that is, as you well know, that is a trend that is moving in the direction of improvement for Alaska with every passing year.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Whoops, we have another question. I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking of it.
I see. Representative Malone?
Yeah, this is a question, I guess, referring to the same page. And it's looking at the comments above that paragraph on the
the whatever about the housing related loans, and there's this statement in the middle of the paragraph. It says, because of the efficiency, recommend that Alaska Housing Finance Corporation be the state agency used to purchase all housing related loans. Now this would this is tied into then the investment by an endowment fund in the mortgage backed paper of HFC.
You said that you would return, or you could return if...
be most pleased to, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to ask Dr. Kaufman, Dr. Fry, just one question. Are you two gentlemen under legislative contract for consulting services?
No.
Under administration contract, Department of Revenue. And your travel plans are to leave soon, or...?
I will be leaving on Wednesday morning, and Dr. Fry will be leaving tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning?
Right.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify? If not, I think that our next meeting of this committee is tomorrow at 1:30. And we do have another item for discussion that concerns the scheduling of further meetings. We're supposed to meet tomorrow, March 18th, 1:30, and I have listed here Senate Finance. Does anybody know if the site is proper?
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, that'll be posted then, both the House and the Senate. Would you wish to talk about this?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Long?
I put together a list of witnesses and also suggested schedule, which, if followed, would mean meetings every day this week. I don't want to impose on the members' previous commitments. I would like to see if we could set up a schedule whereby we could hear the different witnesses, but I would appreciate if people have suggestions that would make the schedule more compatible with the other things that they have to do. I don't want to present people with a schedule that represents an accomplished fact, because I don't think it's completely fair to do. Yeah. So, I don't know if people have some suggestions, or if it's agreeable to meet tomorrow, perhaps by that time we could have time to think about it.
I think your last suggestion is good as far as I'm concerned. Committee response? Representative Chatterton?
No, that's okay.
So we'll be prepared tomorrow then to react to the proposed revision in the schedule. Anything else to come before the committee? If not, thank you, gentlemen. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Adjournment.